Blades in Paradise is a dystopian story intended for adults. These narratives intentionally explore challenging and often difficult to listen to topics. This campaign includes content warnings for gun violence, substance abuse, animal cruelty, child endangerment, and graphic description of physical injuries, including the eyes. Listener discretion is advised. Greetings and salutations, dear friends, and welcome to the inaugural episode of Blades in Paradise. My name is Dr. Winston Thoreau, and I will be your guide to the perils and pleasures of our paradise amidst the post-apocalyptic Pacific Northwest. Now, we'll get to the chicanery and shenanigans momentarily, but before we do, allow me to deliver some news. You'll get that joke momentarily. Blades in Paradise is an actual play podcast running John Hopper's Blades in the Dark system. And we're sponsored by the developer, Evil Hat Games. Use BardRock10 at checkout to save on your order. Bard Rock Network is sponsored by Dragon Master Games. Visit DragonMasterGames.com for all your CCG, TCG, TTRPG, and miniature game needs. If you enjoy the stories we tell, you can tip us on Ko-fi or visit us at patreon.com/BardRockCafe. By sponsoring the network, you not only help us provide you with an ever-expanding library of shows, but gain access to bonus content, the network Discord, quarterly backer games with the network community, and an annual swag bag. Now, without further delay, allow me to introduce you to my cohorts Lizzie, Sterling, and Max, the crew of ESPN. Enjoy.
Hello, welcome to Blades in Paradise, a steampunk dystopian Blades in the Dark actual play production. I'm Paul, and I'm going to be your game master for our first campaign. For the uninitiated, Blades in the Dark by Evil Hat Productions is a D6-based tabletop role-playing game, the system at the core of the popular Forged in the Dark framework. Each player chooses a playbook, which determines their skills and informs their ability scores. As a team, the players agree on a playbook for their crew, which informs what type of jobs they will complete. Before we dive into our story proper, let's go around the table and introduce all the players, their characters, and their playbooks. Let's just go from top to bottom in Discord, so Jim, why don't you go first?
Hi, my name's Jim. I'll be playing Dr. Winston Thoreau, who is a Whisper. I'll be using the Whisper playbook here. For those of you who don't know, the Whisper is interested in the arcane and the ghostly. Dr. Winston Thoreau himself, he's neither a doctor nor is Winston Thoreau actually his name. He's a noble gentleman of unknown parentage, an illustrious scholar of pretense and deception, and a trusted purveyor of the finest placebos known to paradise. They work exactly as intended 100% of the time. Thoreau carries himself with his head held high and his fingers crossed behind his back, impeccably dressed in only the finest of counterfeit luxury goods. He's famously known by the intelligentsia for quoting the phrase, "A sucker is born every minute," despite what that bastard carnival barker says.
Awesome. That was a great introduction. Five stars.
Thank you.
I'm not going to rate everybody, though. That was just really good.
Thank you.
Justin?
Hi, I'm Justin. I will be playing Maximilian, otherwise known as Max Graves. He is an octogenarian. He's in his 80s. At least he thinks he is. He may be much, much older. No one really knows for sure. He is shabbily dressed, but he carries himself with a regalcy that is a little strange because he's also missing half of one leg and an entire arm. He walks with a cane and a prosthetic limb on his leg. He tries his best to look as good as possible, despite his ragged appearance, and he blends in because he is playing a lurk in this campaign. He has a shady past, and his favorite quote is, "There is no God, just follow the golden rule."
I go by Queenie. My name on here is going to be Elizabeth Calhoun, but I go by Lizzie. You see, woman of athletic build in a skirt and blouse, pale skin with flaming red hair from her roots to the tips, and she is from the country and prefers to be just out in the woods doing stuff, tracking and whatnot. My playbook is the Hound.
Hi, I'm Riley. I'll be playing Sterling Ackert, a cutter and therefore the tank of the group. They wear a lot of black jacket over a gray shirt and boots, bruised, tattooed knuckles, mostly cusswards, brown curly hair that's been chopped pretty unevenly. It varies from about a couple of finger widths to like shoulder length. Sterling's a white acarob with brown eyes, a very tense, deliberate gait, and extremely average height.
Hey, thank you all so much for playing at our table for this campaign. I'm excited to get this campaign going, and without further ado, we're going to dive in. The year is 2345, and the world has changed. In a world where fossil fuel got used up and we never developed a replacement source of power, economies and governments collapsed without a fuel source to power their advanced technologies. This threw civilization back hundreds of years as they had to develop whole new ways to power existing technology, and many technologies stopped working altogether or forgotten how to be built. That all changed when Lantern Corporation developed a revolutionary new energy system, large-scale geothermic steam-powered plants built into the inside of mountains, cities built around the mountains for the plants to power. This proprietary energy method allowed technologically advanced cities to rise again, though the technology provided power to extended areas outside the city limits has not yet been developed. What arose as a result is hundreds of city-states across the world, all built around mountains. Obviously, anyone looks at it, the layouts of these cities, there is a corporate planning of some sort to mass production of a cookie-cutter city. Because they have monopoly on power and built all the major cities, the Lantern Corporation installed themselves in the seat of government power, with the friends and relatives of their executives, as well as their wealthy investors, joining the ruling class. The capital of this new land is known as Paradise, because the city itself is heaven on earth. The Lantern Corporation's headquarters are based at the top. But is everything truly what it seems here in Paradise? Or is Paradise about to fall? Our adventure begins in the Gate District of Paradise, at the base of what was once Mount Rainier in Seattle, Washington area. The Gate District is the most populous district of the city, and the lowest income one at that. Mostly residential, the work to be done here is mostly hard labor, agriculture, mining, workers at the power plant. But there are still a few scarce business ventures we found, such as the Express Service Postal Network, or ESPN for short. If you needed something shipped out or delivered wherever you need to go, there are your people for the job. This office is mostly a warehouse with an office space in the front dealing with customers. The backside of the building is flush with the train tracks leading out of the city, as long-distance rail was revitalized after automobiles fell out of common use. Either side are clusters of residences, mostly for employees to minimize commute times. As you all enter work for the day, you're greeted by the owner of ESPN, Bennington Franks, a pale, rotund man with bushy red mustache and a well-tailored charcoal petticoat, with a monocle and a black cane with a silver handle. "Good morning, team," he says, tipping his top hat to you, showing off his balding head. "I have a job for you once you get settled in. Special delivery. High priority."
Benny, you know I can't think about work until I've had at least two cups of coffee. Now, did somebody put it on, or do I have to go do everything myself, as per usual?
Of course I've already put it on. I always make sure there's coffee around.
God, Lizzie, I love you. And I rush over, and I just throw my arms around you and give you a big hug, and then scuttle off to the kitchen.
No public displays of intimacy, please. We have a client in front of us.
No, we have a boss.
There are customers here in the front, but, like, they're just ordinary male customers. The client in question is not present at the moment.
I poke my head out of the back and say, do you really think they're going to return the stamps because I gave her a hug? Come on, Max. Let's get it together here.
Get what together?
Shake my head disapprovingly. Oh, okay, I'll be back.
Oh, if you're going to get coffee, I believe Lizzie made some.
I'm walking out now with two cups, a cup in each hand, and I just hand one to him and just proceed to start chugging the cup I have myself. You were saying, Benny?
All right, well, Benny goes go back to handling customers while you guys get settled, because he did say get settled, so you guys have your coffee and everything. You check your lockers, whatever, those kind of things you do with the first... Everyone has, like, their own thing they do instead of actually working the first 20 or 30 minutes of a workday, right? Or at least some of us do. Anyway, about 20 or 30 minutes later, Benny finishes handling customers, comes in the back where you all are. The client is a gentleman by the name of Charles Norris. He's an artisan in the Clouds District. Why don't you go meet with him, discuss terms, and collect his shipment?
Charles, does he go by Chuck by any chance?
Oh, no, Chuck was his father.
Oh, Mr. Norris, I remember him. He was a good friend of what's his name, Max, what's his name again, the guy who works up on the hill who has the money.
That would be Norbert. Norbert Norris, the third, I believe, Esquire. Junior? I don't know. Where am I?
You're at work, Max. At work today.
Oh, yes, yes, I remember yeah, just, now. Just, thank
just,
you.
Just keep drinking your coffee.
I need to put some extra coffee in your coffee.
Oh, no, no, thank you, Lizzie. I don't drink. Why is there a cup of coffee in my hand? I think this belongs to you.
I'm going to hand it to Lizzie like I got it for her.
And I proceed to put a bunch of sugar and sweetener in it and drink it.
Now, Benny, we're heading uptown to try to figure out what are we bringing to him this time? Is it something big, something...
It's a shipment for you to pick up. He says it's very important, very discreet. He'll discuss the details with you in person. He is up in the clouds, so unfortunately you all have a hike in front of you, and you all know that there's two ways to ascend from the bottom of paradise to the top. There's the elevator, which is only used on special occasions or by the wealthy, and there are the stairs.
I vote for the elevator.
Yeah, the elevator is very expensive. You don't get to take the elevator. The alternative is the stairs. Mount Rainier is a 14,000-foot high mountain, and a flight of stairs is about 10 to 20 feet high. So it's about 500 flights of stairs to the clouds. So you guys better get hiking.
You do realize we're bringing an octogenarian in a wheelchair up to the top of the mountain. You couldn't get us a pass for at least one afternoon.
You have any idea how much coin that elevator costs?
I can guarantee I can climb that mountain faster than you, one leg tied behind my neck. Head back. Back. That's how it goes. Yes.
It's probably true. I was going to ask Sterling for a piggyback.
Ooh. I can give you one.
Sterling assumes the position.
I just hop on.
And the journey from the geysers to the clouds is arduous. Nothing you're not used to. So, you know, you're going there expecting the stairs. As you get there, there's a young gentleman named Jeff, a teenage boy about 16 years of age. And his job is just to greet people with stairs. He's a customs officer. Fine day to you folks, the vested young man says, tipping his newsy cap to you. Do you have any items to declare? And he just stands there looking very expectantly at you.
Only the usual. Jeff, nice to see you again, young man. We only have the usual. We have, I have an extra roll of socks because I only need one. I believe these gentlemen probably are packing, if you know what I mean. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. nothing serious, today, Jeff. I believe, we are just invited up and, we have nothing really to claim.
Just have a bag today, a couple letters to deliver, you know, just the usual. Now, if you'll excuse us, we'll be on our way.
Of course, and he just takes your work papers, because you do basically move between the sections of paradise. You'd either need your something showing you're off the clock or that you have a business reason for moving around. The company doesn't like you moseying around on company time unless it's your job. You guys are postal people, you're good. Jeff waves you on up. And on your way up, he does say, careful on your way up. It's a lot of stairs. And right he is. 500 flights of stairs you have to ascend. One flight of stairs, and then another, and then another. You probably wish you could have taken that out, but it is hella expensive. You have to take several breaks because climbing 500 flights of stairs is going to take a long time. You finally get to the top. And Jeff is standing there waiting at the entrance of the Cloud District. Warned you about those stairs, bro.
You took the elevator, didn't you, Jeff?
The elevator's part of my job. I gotta take the elevator.
You could have offered.
Oh, it's against company policy.
Jeff, we talk to you, like, on a daily basis, my friend. Like, we I come in, I see you, I tell you how much mail I have. You meet me up here every day. Once, just once, I'm gonna ask you, just let it slide. Like, we can help you in many, many different ways. You just have to help us back. You're taking it by yourself. You're using the gas anyway. Who cares if we're sitting next to you?
All right, tell you what. Go ahead and roll sway to try and convince Jeff to start letting you use the elevator instead of taking all these stairs.
May I help with that?
Try to remember how helping works in Blades. I think you just take one stress and it adds a die. So, yes, you can.
All right.
I can make it worth your while, Jeff. I have Werther's in my pocket.
The originals or the new recipe?
The new recipe. You know the original was hundreds of years old.
Or the chewies or the hard candy?
These are hard on the inside and soft on the outside, so I'm not really sure.
That's the opposite of how that usually is.
All right, I've got two die in sway, so let's see. We got three total. That is 5, 3, 1. Mixed success.
Well, 5's still pretty good. So he's like, all right, tell you what, I'll let you guys use it on the way up from now on. The way down, you're on your own. They care a lot more stuff about contraband coming from up here to down there. And that's because, you know, the above game, you guys know that the Cloud District is like where all out of the entertainment and vice is. So like a lot of people do like things. You're more likely to have contraband going down to the poor part of town.
Is it possible to roll to try to have an understanding of if there's any kind of specific contraband that they're concerned about at the moment, or if there's any kind of anything that they're considering specifically illicit that they're on the hunt for?
I'm sure we can do that. I think that's probably a study roll.
Either study or survey.
Yeah, let's go with survey.
Oh, I have 0 in survey.
I have 2 in survey.
All right, so Queen can roll it. That's fine. And I'm going to go ahead and say you're supposed to define a position and risk for Blades. If I don't say so and you guys don't ask, we're just going to assume risky standard, which is like the average of the two settings.
I got 2 3s.
All right, with 2 3s, don't really know stuff. There's like a lot of gangs and like there's a criminal underbelly here in Paradise, and they're trying to regulate things, particularly either things where like people are moving things that are above their economic class, or things that are like are expressly illegal. There's a lot of things that are expressly illegal because the corporation cares about things. But with 2 3s, that's all I'm going to give you.
That's fine.
Are the Werthers legal?
The Werthers are legal.
I think they were barely legal, if anything. I mean, they've been in my pocket for about 40 years.
I'm actually going to go ahead and say, even though Max's memory seems to not be great, I'm going to give him +1 dice on any survey rolls related to remembering the before times, because he's probably the only one of you in living memory who had a relative that lived in the before times.
Fantastic.
Like, just, he's that old, so, like, his grandpa was around during the before times. Yeah, so Max, like, okay, yeah, you guys can take it the way up next time, but, they still want you to go down the stairs. Like, my boss might give me a hard time. They watch me a lot higher up here.
That's fine. I can go down easier than I can come up. Don't make any jokes about that rudeness. You know, if they had just built that big slide like I told them to 60-odd years ago, it'd be easier to get down. Get on that, grease yourself up like in the olden days.
Well, going down's easier than going up.
That's what I say.
Even on stairs.
Why would it be really practical, though?
I'm going to go ahead and say, you probably might have, you guys do have like a connection in your team playbook here that we have not chosen. But let's see if you have somebody who might have access to a slide for you.
Yeah.
And you know what? We have like dock worker here. Go ahead and say you guys have like, because you are the delivery people, you do have access to a slide. Jeff also attends the slide. Somehow Jeff just teleports wherever he needs to go.
Oh, yeah.
You're all not sure how he does it, because you feel like that elevator can't be that fast.
So we're musing about how there should be a slide, and then we remember, oh yeah, we have access to a slide.
Yeah, down's easy. I think they have a couple of slides.
That's great.
The bad part is, you have to grease everything, or else you start getting burned halfway down, and he wants that skin flapping around all red and bright, like shiny. It was a reindeer. In the medieval days, I think it was, with a bright radioactive nose. And I think that was because of the friction burns. What were we doing?
What you're doing is you finish presenting Jeff your thing. He waves you guys through the door to the Cloud District. You guys are good to just walk there. You know generally where you're going. The Clouds District is nicer put together. You know that there's a lot of stuff here. There's a lot of entertainment. So, like, there's an eternal carnival. There's games of chance. There's lots of competitive sports and gaming. But there's also a lot of businesses. Like once you leave the entertainment world, you enter what's called Artisan Way. Eventually, you get to the City Archives. where artisans work to preserve and restore historical documents. At the front counter is a dark-skinned young man in overalls with thick, round glasses over his eyes. Ah, you must be the folks from ESPN. Charles Norris, at your pleasure.
Mr. Norris, we come bearing gifts for you. Just the one package, I'm afraid, today. How is your mother?
Oh, she's doing just wonderful. Thank you so much for asking. I do have... did Benny tell you all about the special delivery I need for you today? He looks around. There's currently no other employees here in the archive. He kind of peeks out the door. Like, you know, the special delivery. Did Benny tell you about the special delivery?
Yes, I believe. We have a special delivery you needed to give to us, or us to you.
Right. Yeah, so I, as you know, as the archivist, I do keep historic documents. I clean them up. I preserve them. That's not why I called you here. So I'm also the local librarian, he says in a hushed tone. You all know libraries were, they're basically considered a thing of the past now. Physical books stopped being printed in the late 21st century when publishing companies realized it was really cheap to distribute ebooks. You didn't have to pay for all that paper and ink. And that when infrastructure crumbled, there was just no more physical books. Because the books right now are very rare because they stopped printing them a long time ago. It doesn't seem strange to you he's talking about the libraries. You know that book distribution is generally one of the things that's frowned upon. If your job requires you to read, that's great, that's golden. Otherwise, it's basically the wealthy elite. Books are considered very valuable, so having them amongst the lower class is not something they like, which is why he's probably being coy about it. But yeah, he's like, I have books for you guys to deliver.
Lizzie hears this and gets all excited because she likes books also.
But yes, Lizzie, I think you were one of my father's classes when he was the librarian.
Yes, I was.
Fantastic. So you're familiar with our program. That's fantastic. So I have these, and he pulls out three large crates from behind the counter, and he pulls out a crowbar and pops one open, and you see the crate is like a big, like 3-foot by 3-foot crate. I'm like, imagine like a milk crate, and just filled with like books for ages like 5 to 10.
As soon as he brings out the actual crate, before he can open it with whatever crowbar, whatever, I elbow Sterling, and I'm like, are books supposed to be that big?
Would I even have seen many books before?
So, you guys deliver mail, so you've probably seen some books, but never in this volume. You've probably delivered, a book ordered by a collector with, papers and stuff. But, seeing a book now is, basically any book is like a first edition Superman comic. They're all super duper rare.
That's a whole lot of book.
Master Norris, may I ask where you obtained such a treasure trove of literature?
Oh, well, I came by as part of my job because we surveyed some local historical documents from the local library, and the things of historical value, I've preserved, I've restored. But these books, I did not report them yet because I don't want them to go to wealthy, well-read collectors. I want to continue working within the Librarians Network to help the disenfranchised to learn to read. Without reading, we're going to lose the continuity of knowledge the human race has accumulated. So it's very important to I and the other librarians that these books get to people who need to learn how to read. I don't think it's that important that Green Eggs and Ham go to an expensive collector. And he pulls out a copy of Green Eggs and Ham.
I had Green Eggs and Ham the other day. My bowels have not been the same since.
We really need to get you a caretaker. That's not appropriate or correct. I'm worried about you.
Oh, I don't see why. I mean, I am fit as a fiddle. I
cough out a tooth.
Oh, that's new.
Is that yours?
I hope so.
Now, Mr. Norris, if I may, have you been through these books? Have you looked through them all? Are they all how they're supposed to be, I guess is the best way to say it. I just want to make sure I'm dealing with the authentic thing here.
I'm an expert in my field. I have personally reviewed all these books for authenticity. Obviously, I did not read them all page to page, cover to cover, but I have authenticated them myself with the accreditations I have for that purpose. I am confident these are all the genuine articles. Can you help me?
Oh, absolutely. We should probably have something. Did we bring our cart? We could put that in there and just wheel it down the slide, maybe.
How are we going to bring a cart up the stairs?
500 flights of stairs.
Well, how about this? We've basically solved that problem already. One or two of us can go back to base. We can go pick up the stand. We can bring it over to the elevator, and young Jeffrey will, for the price of a Werther's or two, help us up the way.
So that will solve part of the problem. So the other part is, I need you to get this. It's not a local delivery. It is to Salvation. Salvation is a city built into Mount Hood, which is about a 3-hour train ride south of where you currently are. Ooh. So you need to get it past Jeff, but then you need to get it safely onto the train, which is another security check. And then you need to make sure that nobody takes it on the train. This is above game me explaining to you guys what that's going to involve. So basically, he just said you need to get Salvation. This is what's running through your heads as you think, oh, Salvation. So you had a 3-hour train ride, and then there's a custom stop at Salvation. And then you may or may not have to go through another one to get to Chuck's counterpart in Salvation, which is, he tells you, is a woman.
Paul, is there a Salvation Army?
There might be.
Is there a layover in Perdition?
Oh, no, Perdition's even further south.
You have to take the road to Perdition.
Right. It's a hard-traveled road. I think that we can absolutely take these forms of literature, books, volumes, tomes, if you will. Absolutely. Do we have something instead of going all the way back to our headquarters? Maybe we have, a flatbed that you could loan us? Maybe?
That's not the issue. The issue is, you're going to have to get these by the customs officer.
That's
going to inspect the crates. I don't know if you want to have them on an open-topped vehicle.
Well,
I do have a flatbed.
What's typically the largest package we'd be bringing down to, just in the mail, what's the largest package we'd be bringing down to the bottom?
Normally.
Yeah, it could vary, like a lot of standard parcels, but like it's not uncommon for people to have very large shipments, because you have to remember, like you're also gonna be delivering things like supplies from up there. It's not just mail. It's like basically you guys are the business that transports things that need to be delivered from one area to another. So if like there's a business that needs a shipment of something, you guys are the people who deliver shipments.
Enjoy what you're hearing. Rate us on your favorite podcatcher. Reviews on platforms like Apple, Spotify, or Good Pods help new listeners find our content. It's a completely free way to support the show. Thanks for listening.
Most folks don't realize it, but the world is rife with monsters. And when you have a monster problem, you need someone who is smart.
I came over here, I saw that there was a crime scene, I figured, you know, I'd park here on the...
Crime scene. Brave.
It's just not our fight. We just honk the horn, everybody dissipates, and we just ride away.
And qualified.
If nobody is going to assist David with this, he is going to pull out his nunchucks.
Who gave him those nunchucks?
Van Helmond's family is none of those things, but they're the best we've got, so check them out on Monster Cafe, available now wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
All right, so planning. You're going to choose one of six plans for how you're going to commit your crime, which is basically delivering this contraband to another city. Assault. Do a violence to somebody. Deception. Lure, trick, or manipulate things. Stealth. You're just going to move unseen. Occult. You're going to invoke supernatural powers. Social. You're going to negotiate, bargain, or persuade your way to committing the crime. Or transport. You're just going to carry cargo or people through danger. Technically, transport would always be the plan, but you can approach these from other angles. Transport just an element of the job for you guys. So you don't have to pick transport. Transport is the easy one if you're not sure. But this is where you kind of talk out what you want.
I'm all for deception or bribery.
I think the question is how we're going to need to get these there. So we have really two stops we have to make. We have the initial stop past young Jeffrey, who quite frankly has the brain cells the size of the buttons on my coat, and we should be able to get by him very simply. Secondly, we have, once we get down into the train yard, provided we take the train, after about 3 hours, we'll need to lay our goods down, or at least a sampling of them, in front of everybody. The question is, how detailed are they going to be with their review of our goods?
That is an excellent question. So that's going to, how detailed they are is going to come down to, much like any stop at the TSA, the employee you get, which is going to be part of the engagement role after you guys pick your plan.
How about we use some of those boxes that the books came in, put them on the flatbed, and is there a rat disposal system in this area?
So let me get this straight. Your plan is to throw the books in the garbage and hope for the best?
Oh, no. What I'm planning is put the books back in the crates, put a fake top over the books, put the dead rats on top, and say this is the meat for the masses that we have to deliver in the outer counties. Since they are in need of meat and rats are a plentiful source, I'll just have a bunch of dead rats on top.
Now I see where you got your green eggs and ham from.
I do like the idea of the false bottom boxes, and I will say because you guys do have some individual smuggling experience, even though this is your first group crime smuggling stuff, you definitely would have the ability to attempt to manufacture a false bottom to kind of like put something else on top for the TSA to find. If that was your route you wanted to go. That sounds like you'd want to go the deception route because you're trying to trick them. That sound fair?
That sounds fair.
I think that's very fair. Children's books are also very small. We could also line a crate with something with them to perhaps, you know, line the walls of something, of the carts that we may have, of our delivery equipment. They're very small and they're very thin, and we should be able to hide them in between something very easily.
Well, and we could also just take several crates, and because them being small, only put about a fourth lined on the bottom of the crates with the rats on top.
I ain't begging you all to pick a different thing to ship than dead rats.
I have an idea for something we could ship, but it might just draw more attention. What if we say it's like a dangerous creature in there and then they don't want to inspect it?
We could just put Max in the box and that we wouldn't be lying.
It wouldn't be the first time.
I will go ahead and say, because you guys are the male people, you do have other items you could put on top of these crates. Like, you asked about a manifest or whatever, like, you're up here, like, you can get regular mail because you're the male people.
I was going to say, wouldn't we normally, if we went back to base, couldn't we just get a shipment of mail that's dedicated to go to Salvation anyway and just put the mail on top?
That's exactly something you could do. Just like, oh yeah, these are crates of unsorted mail. To me, as the DM, that's a great plan.
And we can throw the rats on top just as an extra added bonus.
Did you buy like 1,000 rats that you need to get rid of? Like, is there something that you have done with these rats already?
I need a new coat.
We're going to do the engagement roll now. So basically that starts as a flat D6 for luck. And then we're going to go through some checklists. So because it does not affect by any of your scores, who would like to do the first engagement roll of the campaign?
Queenie, you want it?
I think Jim should go.
Jim got to do the first roll of the night, you sure? Yeah, why will the Queen do it? I heard someone suggest Queen. All right, so Queen, what we're going to do is I'm going to figure out how many dice you get to roll based on these questions. So you get one for sheer luck. You're guaranteed at least one D6. Is this operation particularly bold or daring? And is it overly complex or contingent on many factors? It is not overly complex, so we're not going to reduce your dice. Yeah, I will go ahead and say that this is an average plan, so no bonus dice there. Does the detail of the plan expose the vulnerability of the target or hit them where they're weakest? The detail here is the method of deception. I feel like you guys creating a false appearance of things is exposing weakness. I'll give you one dice for that. Do you have friends or contacts providing aid or insight? I'm going to go ahead and say you guys befriended Jeff. So yeah, go ahead. Three dice.
Is that it?
Yep.
A six, a two, and a one.
That's a solid dramatic roll.
Six is a complete success, so let me tell you what benefits you get for a six on an engagement roll.
Do we get the flamethrower on top?
All right, so you have what's considered a controlled position for this crime. You have taken pretty much everything into account. You're fairly confident your plan is solid. So that's what we get with the engagement roll. You're going to load your stuff up on the cart. I'm trying to think if there's a relevant role for creating this false bottom.
Tinker, maybe?
Yeah, let's roll Tinker. Does anyone have points in Tinker?
I got one.
I have zero.
Well, one's better than none, so go ahead and... We're going to say this is controlled because you're in an environment where you can kind of keep trying. It's just a matter of time. You know, so the way controlled works is if you screw it up, you can try one more time and bump it to risky. I think this is going to be standard effect. Like you're not going to trick them in such a way where you're going to get particularly away with it. You can only get standard or bad. You're going to go ahead and roll your 1d6 and see how you do.
A two.
Yeah, no. So your first attempt, not great. You can either pivot to a new plan or you guys can try. Also, people can offer help to give Queen extra dice on the second try if you want.
I think I'll offer her help by sitting up on the couch, putting my feet up with a newspaper, and giving her instructions on how to build the false bottom.
Awesome. So you're going to go ahead and take one stress. Queen now gets to roll 2d6.
This very is hard.
Risky.
Now we're at a 5 and a 3.
A 5 is a mixed success. So the craftsmanship's not great, but like unless they violently jostle the box, you get the impression it's going to be okay. It looks a little shallow. That's one of the things where, like, well, the false bottom, you kind of need to make it look like it's close to what the bottom looks like from the outside. You may be stacked it a little high. It might not hold up to scrutiny, but probably will. That's all I'll give you for a mixed success on a 5.
So I am going to hobble over to it and see if it kind of bears my weight on top a little bit.
If anything, I can fake a heart attack and you have to get me to my surgeon and get me leeched and bleached. I don't know what they bleach, but I only have two teeth left in my head, so.
And how are we supposed to know that it's a fake heart attack and not just you keeling over?
I won't even know.
That's method right there. You guys, are you doing this like in the archives where Chuck has the books to start? Is Chuck watching you guys have this conversation?
Yeah, I think that's really the only safe place we have right now, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, you guys, he's like looking
at
you.
He's a witness. We must kill him.
he's like, this is the best people Benny had for this job, oh dear.
I feel like Justin should be rolling dice to see if he keels over.
We'll get there.
He accidentally acts too hard.
Yep. Yeah, that'll be when he rolls his sway roll to convince her heart attack. If he gets a bad success, he'll actually have a heart attack. You have a flatbed truck that we procured from the archives. And you have, I'm going to say, 6 false bottom crates because you had to divide those.
Now, do we need to get anything else before we head over towards young Jeffrey just in case he decides to peek in one of the boxes? Because if he sees 6 empty boxes that we came up to pick up, he may be slightly suspicious.
I assumed you guys put stuff in there that looks like you're delivering it. That was me. obviously, you put something on top of a false bottom box. I felt like it was part of the plan baked in we didn't even discuss. That's my bad.
Like all those dead rats that Max was talking about.
Yeah, you have like the return mail from the clouds that needs to go back down to gate. You know, that's kind of what you got.
They ran out of paper 50 years ago, so now they have to use rats.
I feel like Max is going to start a long-term project that's just training rats to deliver packages.
Go, my legion!
He already has 4 wedges in the clock filled in.
With that in mind, do you guys have any other preparations you want to do before you roll up to the slide? And is your plan actually to put a flatbed truck and or three crates on a slide.
I think we need to find a way to pad it, don't we?
I mean, books are somewhat durable. I think your issue is whether or not it will crack open at the bottom.
That's my concern.
I was wondering if a couple of us shouldn't go down ahead of it. To try and catch it at the end.
But you do have that couch that you're sitting on, young man. You can use those cushions.
But then where am I going to sit?
You can sit on top of me.
I think I'll...
Please don't steal my couch.
Well, we need something to come down the hill. I mean, how else am I going to go down the slide?
I mean, we don't have a rope or anything we can slowly let ourselves down with. If only there were a way to control our downward momentum instead of speeding up into the jaws of infinity.
DM, under my hound items is climbing gear. I didn't mark any items. Would that be one of them?
The way that we're going to do loadout, and I'm stealing this from the Adventure Zone because they're also doing a Blazing Dark campaign as we record this, is unless you, like, you can just be like, oh, hey, I have available load. This is an item I probably would have brought for this. It makes sense to me if you were, like, planning on doing climbing stuff in the mountain city you live in, you might have brought your climbing gear.
Okay, then I have rope.
Well, we're worried about the slide. What do we know about the slide and how quickly or dangerously our cargo will be pursuing, heading downwards, rather?
It goes down 10 to 20 feet, stories.
here's the thing. We just established that you're about 480 flights of stairs up. You're going to hit terminal velocity on that slide. I'm going to go ahead and say there's probably, like, something to cushion your fall at the bottom because they don't want you to die. Like, I'm just imagining, like, a really big waterbed or something. Something's going to, like, be bouncy.
I could always just throw my cane in front of the wheels when we get to the bottom. That should stop us.
Well, and if I'm at the top holding onto it, it should slow it down, too.
Well, here's the thing. It's a 500 stories. You do not have a 5,000-foot rope.
No, I'll agree. I would say 50 foot.
Well, could we fashion a rudimentary parachute of some kind to put on the back for it to kind of catch some drag, maybe slow it down as it hits?
I mean, if you want to go ahead and roll some more tinker.
Lizzie, this is your skill set.
We also have this.
Yes, it's my skill set, and I'm taking your jacket, because don't you have a jacket?
I have a jacket, but it matches these pants perfectly, and if you think that for 1 second I'm going to, and I assume that someone has already ripped the jacket off of me to turn into a makeshift parachute.
Lizzie would have.
Also, I will say, you guys are in, like, the entertainment district. If you guys want to roll, like, normally you do this during downtime. If one of you wants to roll for an asset and see if you guys know a guy who might have actual parachutes.
Max is halfway undressed already.
Hang on.
Sterling watches them wrestle the jacket away from the doctor and just, like, shrugs and puts theirs back on.
He's, like, twice my size. It's going to be so much better if we use... All right, forget about this. Is there a circus or some other... Well, why am I asking if there is a circus up here? I feel like I'm losing my... All right, jacket is fine.
There is, in fact, a circus up here.
I mean, the tent would be...
It's called the Eternal Carnival.
Is it a traveling circus?
No, it's just like there's a district where there's always a circus going on. It's like Las Vegas, but a circus.
They won't notice if we take one of their tents. I mean... Who would notice one of their tents being missing? Anyone smell toast?
They might even have spares or like a backup emergency tent somewhere we could grab.
Maybe they just have like a parachute for that guy they shoot out of the cannon.
Did the archive have curtains?
Yes, there are curtains on the windows of the archive. I ask you, like, ask about curtains. Charles looks at you like, what you can do with my curtains?
I like how there are all these reasonable solutions.
Gonna try and get your books down the slide safely.
Now we need some steel grating and some riveting. We're making rudimentary wings, like the pterodactyls that roamed the earth in the And when we hit terminal velocity, we pull back on the reins and let that puppy ride through the air.
Why don't we just bribe Jeffrey to use the elevator going back down? He already likes us.
I have to say that is the best possible like punchline to 20 minutes of trying to build parachutes and wings onto three boxes because of how high up you are.
I mean, I'm all for stealing a circus tent, but quite frankly, I'm lazy. So let's just go talk to Jeffrey. Let's take the elevator down, and if he won't let us do it, then maybe we knock him unconscious. I don't know, Max, you're good at that. Actually, Sterling's
good at that. I've heard of that item of artifice from the before times, Charles says. Charles is like, yeah, no, I remember escalators. Why didn't they build that? That would have been great.
Even when it breaks, it's just stairs.
Well, a clock is right twice in one day. All that, yes, I suppose. We could go the boring route. But what is it the youngsters used to say? You only die once? Something like that.
Yeah.
I've died three times, and I keep coming back every damn time. Anyway, where are we?
We're at work.
We're up, and we're trying to get down.
We're on our way out.
Go talk to Jeffrey.
Mr. Norris, we thank you for your assistance. We may be back for your curtains.
I was going to take my clothes and fashion a parachute.
Fantastic. Good luck to you all. And when you deliver the books, Bell will pay you some coin for your work.
I believe there's a little bit of negotiation we should be doing regarding the number of coin. Is there not?
How does one coin each sound? That's four coin for the lot of you.
And how many rats?
I will throw in three rats.
That's good. I don't want one. And then I walk out the door.
I do too.
Max just starts stuffing his pockets with rats.
These will keep me warm tonight.
Poor old man.
So do you guys just wheel the flatbed over to Jeff?
Yep.
Yeah, I think we bring one of the boxes over to Jeff. And maybe leave the...
Well. You're going to carry these big, heavy crates down the stairs, are you?
I have the weathers for you, young Jeff.
DM.
Yep.
Is the elevator door open? Does it require a key?
It requires a key. Jeff has the key. He has a key. I'm going to say, like, it's like one of the things where, like, I'm trying to think of like the steampunk equivalent of like a fob we have in the 21st century that you wipe up and like I have the idea, put it in there. I think it's like probably like a like big geary toothy key.
I would like to offer young Jeff the Werther's, and as I'm trying to fumble it out of my pocket, accidentally drop it and perhaps snatch the key or fob if I can.
Sounds good to me. Does anybody want to help? I'm going to go ahead and say this is a risky standard. Or, you know, risky great, actually, because this would basically bypass half your risk for this stage if you pull this off, so.
I'll take a stress to help.
All right. So this is... this feels like it is probably finesse.
Okay. I have one in finesse.
All right, so you have one in finesse and you have one die from Jim. Do you feel like that's enough before you roll?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead and roll and see what you get.
2d6, I got a 5 and a 4.
All right, a 5 is a mixed success. So you drop the Werther's and you're going for it. Jeff also bends to pick it up for you and you guys bump heads, but you get it. But while he's like, ow, that's smart, you pull the key out of his thing. You're just going to go ahead and take one harm for bumped noggin.
I'm an old frail man, after all.
Does his forehead look concave to anyone else other than me?
That's always been there.
What is it?
My mother, she had slippery fingers when I was a baby, so...
Anyway, so Jeff bumps his head and he's like, okay, he opens one crate, he's like, yeah, okay, just mail, whatever. You guys are good. I'm going to go ice this. Go ahead and start heading down the stairs. And he walks off.
Thank you, young man. And there's another Werther's in it for you next time, if we are allowed. Sweeten the pot.
I'm gonna go ahead and say, because you have that, and it's not like it's just like a key that like they aren't going to change the lock on the elevator, you basically just gained permanent access to the elevator as long as you're stealthy about it. However, you also get the insight thing. Jeff's probably gonna be in serious trouble that you took his elevator key.
Meh. He's a bastard anyway.
I didn't like his tone. He was really, he was just very flippant. Like, he just seemed like he was...
A little spiteful.
Yeah, he was like he was acting like he was above us. I just wasn't a fan.
His father never hugged him, you know that.
You knew his father?
No, I thought
Max
you were
knew
his father.
Everybody.
I knew some people in the right situations and places. Where am I?
Getting ready to go down on the elevator with these
elevator
crates.
Yes.
He just spins the fob on his finger real quick.
Let's go.
You pop it into the little card slot, the door pops open with a ding, and you guys get up in there, and you know, elevators usually take, like, after they start and go, like, I don't know, 5 to 10 seconds per floor, so you have a couple minutes. And they're playing like this old, like, honky-tonk piano tune of the elevator music.
I'm going to vomit.
Is there a railing?
There is a railing. There's
I'm
a brass
railing. I'm
dancing
to the music.
Holding very tight to the railing.
Yeah. This thing also starts going really fast after the first 10 floors, because it's got 500 floors to go. So yeah, you feel like the feeling of, like, the Tower of Terror at Disney World. Of, like, your stomach shooting up to your chest.
Max is levitating off the floor.
And then you just watch the elevator ding down a bajillion freaking floors. And once there's like 20 floors left, you feel it start slowing down because it's not trying to kill you.
Pretty sure
it is. Damn
it.
Yeah, it like eases to a stop. You feel your stomach shoot back down where they belong with a thud as it starts slowing down. But it doesn't slow down away. It gives you whiplash. It's like relatively controlled. It's meant for wealthy people to do it, so it's safer than stuff around here. And the door pops open, and you would normally expect to see Jeff, but Jeff is currently at the nurse's station 500 floors up. So he took his elevator key.
I walk out of the elevator, straighten my tie, and just keep moving, saying, nah, I could get used to this kind of luxury. Come on, let's go.
How much do you think we should charge for elevator rides?
I think that we could get much more than coin for an elevator ride. Favors are the best kind of currency around here.
That I agree with.
I mean, why steal the cow when you can drink the milk for free? Is that how that goes? Someone help me out. I can't remember
these
idioms anymore.
I think you're supposed to buy the cow.
Oh, yes.
But the rest of it's right.
That tracks. Tally-ho!
As I hobble slowly forward.
And speaking of tracks, you do have a cart. And I'm going to go ahead and say you have, like, a mule that can pull it. It'll probably take 2 or 3 times as long as taking the train to get to Salvation, if you want to take the cart. Because you did not roll well on the roll to produce the cart. So you had like, I got like a 3. You have like the oldest cart and the sickest mule.
2 questions. One, are there any security checkpoints on if we were to take the road versus taking the train?
Just when you got to Salvation, the bigger problem is going to be the area between cities is very dangerous. There are outlaws who don't live in the cities, there are wild animals, and there's basically no infrastructure. So outside of the train, it's like, yeah, there's like, you're going to the bathroom in the woods, you're fountain foraging.
You're going to the bathroom
food.
In the woods.
You have that portable potty that I've heard.
Let's head back to base, let's get some train passes. Lizzie did an acceptable job with the boxes. We should be fine if we have to go through security.
Did you say exceptional?
No, I said acceptable, as in it's barely above where we need to be.
Oh. Well, when is the train going to leave?
That's a good question.
There's a couple trains a day, because there's, like, commerce between the cities.
When it comes to the train, are all of the cars equivalent, or are there some cars that... you know, maybe privately owned and not get searched?
It's complex. So, like, the train system is owned by the city. There are cargo carts, which are generally what you guys use because you are the main source of cargo. Other than that, like, there's travelers who are, like, traveling on business, mostly the wealthy or merchants. They also take up some cargo carts. So imagine like a train. If there's like a 10-cart train, like the three caboose cars are going to be like the cargo. And then you have all the passenger areas up kind of like in the middle. And like probably first class is like the two ones up in the front before the engine car.
Would Lantern Corp have its own car that may again have some sort of guaranteed delivery or privacy, something that we could sneak into?
In terms of shipping stuff, no, because like the idea I think here is we're in like a dystopian capitalist society, so the idea is like, no, we have private, we just contract private couriers for things. We don't have our own guys for this. No, you do a procurement for a contract and those guys do it. Because then we don't have to pay them benefits. Their company has to deal with that. So yeah, Lantern Corp just give you guys the thing. Now I'll say actually go ahead and roll either survey or study, whichever you feel is better for this. We're going to say controlled standard.
I'll roll study since I've got one already, so I'll roll.
Survey.
We'll let Jim do this.
That's two.
Two, yeah. Yeah, like, you think about it, you're like, have I delivered a Lantern Corp job before? You haven't.
No, nor would I. I don't trust them. As far as I can throw them.
I'll go ahead and say, since it was controlled, if Queen wants to roll survey for the same thing, she may.
Yeah, I got a 2 and a 3, so I'm not any better.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, no, like, you get the impression that if you could show that Lantern Corp was your client, they would probably show some more impression. But you don't have enough experience to, like, forge that or to... Like, you don't, like, have, like, the ability ready available to go, oh, yeah, no, I have, like, a thing saying this is priority business. So, it's just, like, right now you have standard cargo. It's not an option you have.
Right, and do we need to go get dispensation or get any type of tickets from, you know, main office? Or can we just head down to the train station and just let them know we have a delivery to make?
Yeah, you just let them know you have a delivery to make. You guys have, like, the employee pass. Like, basically, Perfect. You have the key equivalent of, like, Jeff's key. Like, oh no, we ride the train all the time. We're freaking flyers.
It's like a key party up in here.
Yeah, and you do have, like, a manifest of stuff. So, like, you have other deliveries of other things you'd load on the train. And normally, like, because this is a special job, you're doing it. It's not peculiar that you're all the ones doing it. But, like, the four of you haven't been on the same kind of job before because, like, you don't usually have something high priority. Like, you're all basically, like, supervisor-level, like, shippers. Like, the veterans. So... Like, each of you probably individually done this run, but never together. So, there's that. But yeah, you all get on the train easily, but you have to go to the security checkpoint with your manifest. I guess, who wants to go ahead and roll? I will give you +1 to sway anyone's trying to convince them that this is okay. Because you guys did do such a good job packing
your
crates.
I've got 2 in sway already.
All right, so yeah, that would be 3 to just try and, like, you get there and there's the guys, like, oh, hey, how you guys doing?
6-4-4.
Yeah, yep, with a 6 on the die. He's like, oh yeah, no, it's ESPN, I love you guys. You did great work. He's like, let me just take a quick peek in this crate, make sure everything looks legit. And he just pops it open, glances inside.
Oh my heart.
Like, oh, Max, how are you, buddy?
Not feeling well. I don't feel my arm at all on this side.
That's because it's a prosthetic, Max.
Oh yeah, didn't you lose that in like a bet or something a couple years back? I feel like you told me that story.
Oh yes, I'm sorry. I sometimes forget. Phantom limb and all.
Anyway, you guys are good. Go ahead and load your cargo in here and then grab some seats to coach.
Coach Derek, really? Really?
Alright, if you wanna, like, there's Come only on. Coach and the nice one. You
it's us,
have...
it's
Here's the thing,
coach. It's ESPN, you love us. Come on. Come on, buddy.
So here's the thing. I can upgrade you guys to not first class, but like business class. The thing is, you will be further from your car because coach is next to the cabooses.
I want next to end coach, next to the cargo.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to sit with my colleagues, or can I take the nicer seat and let them kind of?
Oh, you know, sure. You do me a solid. Just, you know, bring me a couple extra brewskis on poker night next week.
Anytime, anything for you, Derek. You're my friend.
Yeah, and Derek just waved, like, gives just Jim's character, whose name is escaping.
Dr. Winston Thoreau.
Yeah, he gives just Winston a business class ticket, and the rest of you, coach.
Do I sit on top of the crate as usual?
All right, That's fine. If one of you wants to stay and guard the cargo, that's fine. We just don't want all of you doing it because it makes people antsy having a bunch of people in the carts.
All right, but before we head off, let's circle the wagons and try to figure out what we're going to be doing next. I'm going to go grab a drink, maybe take a nap, maybe talk to one or two people if I'm feeling up to it. For the rest of you, I'm not entirely certain what you should be doing, but I'll leave it up to Lizzie to decide.
I'm going to sit on top of the crate and meditate on the meaninglessness of life. The abyss beckons me constantly. And do I heed its clarion call, or do I ignore the sweet siren song? Where are we again?
We're on the train. Go to sleep on the crate.
Oh, thank you.
And Lizzie sits at the farthest back seat that she can find in coach.
All right, and how about Sterling? Where is Sterling positioning themselves?
I'll sit kind of in the middle of the car.
All right, fantastic. So the train embarks, and like I said, it's like a 3-4 hour ride by train. Winston.
Yes.
You're sitting in business class. And you see like a bunch of various business class people, you know, merchants and things. What catches your eye about an hour out when you guys are in the middle of no man's land? A group of four people stand up and reach into their jackets and produce a collection of firearms and say, "All right, this is a stick up. Nobody move."
Blades in Paradise is Paul Kinter as Master of Ceremonies, Justin Langston as Maximilian Graves, Faith Queenie Long as Lizzie Calhoun, ML Riley as Sterling Acrid, and myself, Jim Remus, as Dr. Winston Thoreau. Dami Widener is our editor. You can directly support this show at patreon.com/bardrocknetwork, starting at just $3 a month. You can join us on Discord, you can come play games with us, we'll even send you network swag at the end of the year. You can visit our sponsor, Evil Hat Games, and use code BARDROCK10 to buy cool games like Blades in the Dark, and let them know we sent you. You can support the podcast for free by sharing us on social media, word of mouth, or rating and subscribing on your favorite podcatcher. Lastly, you support us just by listening. Thank you for listening, dear friends.
Our show and all the other shows on Bard Rock Network wouldn't be possible without the support of people like you on our Patreon and Ko-fi. That's why we like to thank supporters who pledge above a certain tier at the end of network productions. This month's top supporters are Sarah, Queen, Viralor, and Paul. Thank you all so much for supporting the network. If you want to get shoutouts and other rewards, pledge on our Patreon or Ko-fi today. Links in the show notes.